Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Welcome to Principled. As LRN turns 25 this year, we are delighted to share this next episode in the Principled Podcast series. Joining us today is AP Capaldo Aoun, the Director of Ethics and Compliance for Tech Data Corporation. AP, welcome to Principled.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm really excited to have you on this episode today because I've watched the progression in your career. You've got such an amazing level of energy that you bring to the field of compliance and ethics. And I have to start off by asking, how did the Office of Compliance find you?
It was really exactly what you said. It was based on my sort of involvement in the profession and the fact that I've always been really excited and really passionate about connecting with other professionals in this space. So it was one of those things where I was in the space and somebody reached out to me and thought that this might be a great opportunity for me. So that's kind of how I found myself here. But, you know, taking a step back in terms of how I first came into compliance in general, I was involved in undergrad in a program with the U.S. Department of State. And at the time, part of what I was doing was I was working for an office called the Office of Foreign Missions. And part of what we would do there is we would do training for law enforcement around appropriate handling for diplomats in the community, right? So what are some of the things that you need to do if you're engaging with a diplomat as a law enforcement officer? So that's one of the things that office did, as well as kind of ensuring consular compliance, right? And that's what I called it, right? Is just compliance in terms of just reciprocity agreements and all the different things that regulate that world. And that got me really thinking about this whole topic of compliance, which is such a It's such a broad in scope area, but you know, that was really kind of my foray into it. I started to research it more. And at the time I was thinking about going into law school, and I ultimately did end up going to law school thinking I'd, you know, come back out, take a foreign service exam and become a diplomat myself. But the whole time really interested in this area of compliance, and a lot of people just didn't even understand it or weren't even in tune to it. And I remember being in law school and talking to a lot of professors about it and them just kind of thinking it was this really removed thing or not an actual viable practice area for an attorney. But nevertheless, I continued being really interested in it and did a lot of like directed readings and research around it. And also, as I was in law school, networked a ton with attorneys who were practicing this space. And then when I graduated, I ended up joining a boutique firm that specializes in compliance. And at the time, it was one of the very few that was heavily focused on proactive initiatives, right? So not just doing litigation or white collar defense in the context of, you know, FCPA, but actually building programs with a very sort of outside in-house approach. So I joined, it's a firm called MDO Partners based in Miami. So I joined the firm and kind of proved a lot of my professors wrong in the sense that I would be able to go into compliance just right out of graduation, right? Without maybe what was at the time the conventional wisdom of, well, you really need to practice in the corporate space for a couple of years or as a labor and employment lawyer, and then you can kind of segue into compliance. But that's kind of how I ended up in compliance.
I think you bring an attitude to it too. You bring a very kind of fresh attitude and perspective. Like you take a very proactive approach. And I've often wondered, how much did mentorship help shape or influence how you approached the compliance and ethics field? Were there any particular individuals or parts of your journey that may have influenced how you saw it?
Absolutely. I mean, mentorship, internship, all of this shit has been critical, I think, to my success, especially because, as I mentioned, when I started out and when I identified that I had an interest in compliance, it wasn't ubiquitous, right? It wasn't something that a lot of people were talking about in the way that it is now. It's like a whole industry now. And it just wasn't that. So finding people that were even willing to talk to me about it was difficult initially. And there wasn't a huge like body of research like there is in a lot of areas of the law. And so I really proactively reached out. And so it, you know, initially, I mean, two of my biggest mentors have been obviously Richard Montefeoca. He is the founding partner of MDO Partners, and he had been the former chief compliance officer of Royal Caribbean. And so that was amazing because he had that in-house outside experience. And so he was really instrumental, I think, in my career. And then Marcina Ryan Weldon, who's now a professor at the University of Miami Law School, teaching compliance. So she herself is kind of a perfect illustration of the evolution of compliance from something that was kind of a bolt-on or some general counsel's part-time job all the way to an actual subject area that law schools are teaching, right? And she's also been extremely critical to my success as well. And I mean, I've gotten really lucky. I've had incredible bosses and mentors. I say all of my bosses. I've always taken jobs, not necessarily for the company and not even always for just the role, but because of the person that I'm working for. And every single boss is definitely, you know, a critical piece of my development. So initially it was about just learning how to build a program, understanding the nuts and bolts, understanding what works in for corporations, what's practical, what are the realities, all the way through to now where I have a much bigger focus on what is the role I play within the ecosystem of the organization? What are the things that I can drive? How can I be a thought leader and an influencer within my organization? And where, how can I drive business value? So that's a huge evolution, right? From just learning how to build a program all the way through to being just a business leader, essentially, right? At its very core.
I feel like you're kind of shepherding this millennial approach to compliance. I mean, how much do you feel like you have this responsibility to challenge some of the ways or the defensive ways the programs were set up to chart kind of the next course?
Yeah, I think I feel an enormous responsibility. I do think that in some ways, I think very differently about compliance, you know, not just because I just happen to be younger, but I think also I wasn't born in the U.S., right? I'm from another country. I come from a very international community. And so I think I have just a different perspective altogether, and I've developed a bigger perspective as well, just from having been in multiple industries. So all of that gives you sort of a very complex and critical eye. And I think the other responsibility that I have is, you know, when we started this dialogue of compliance, let's say that we really started to talk about this 15 years ago, and I would argue 10 years ago, really, it was a lot about, well, don't have a paper program. Your program needs to have teeth. We're past that. We're very clear now that we can't just have a paper program. Now it's about it's about effectiveness. And I know a lot of people talk about that. But for me, it's about, does it resonate? And it ties to culture. And because the landscape of our workforce is changing rapidly, it's not going to stop changing. It's not going to stop being disrupted. Just, you know, we have to be in touch. Emotional intelligence and being in touch with all the different people that you need to interact with is so, so critical. And that's not just about making sure you're reaching millennials and engaging with them. That's also making sure you're reaching out to and reaching across all of the landscape, every country, every type of profile of an individual and employee. It's not just, you know, a subset of your employed population. It's absolutely everyone. You have to get the buy-in. And for me, what I'm passionate about is making sure that the compliance message resonates and that we're being transparent and in some ways just telling it how it is, right? Because there can be a lot of this like mechanical artifice around how we position things and, oh, you know, the policy says this. And frankly, I think in some ways, a lot of that verbiage and language turns people off. So understanding how you're understanding how you're reaching people is almost sometimes more of a marketing creative exploit than it is just a legal or compliance analysis.
The context and resonating it's so important. And I think that what you say, you know, you can't just sit in office like at corporate and kind of legislate behavior and context, right? So how do you, and you bring up a great point about going global and keeping it local. How do you scale that? So for large organizations that are trying to really work to take their policy and take the principles of their program and then translate and humanize it at a local level, especially outside the U.S., what are some of your tips and guidelines in that area?
Yeah, so I have a lot of ideas on this. I think the first thing is making sure you even understand your business, right? And that you need to be not at your desk for that. You need to be meeting with people. You need to understand what makes your business different in every different location, country, region, however it is that you're operating. So that's the big thing before you even think about how to tailor it. And then making sure you're not being tone deaf, right? So making sure you understand, it can be as simple as the names you use in your training. There are names that may not resonate in other countries. And so if you receive a training and the names or something that doesn't even, it just doesn't even ring a bell to the people receiving the training, how effective already off the bat is your training, right? So thinking through that, thinking through how can you, and it, you know, it's going to depend on the needs of your company and how global you are, but thinking through what are the things that are going to resonate and not resonate with your people in different locations is critical. I think the other thing we don't do enough of as compliance professionals is engaging with our business. Our business oftentimes has cracked the code on this, especially if you're in a you're in an industry or company where you're marketing to people externally, because you have to market to your customers, and those customers are in different places. And so how are they doing it? Are they using different colors? Are they using different avenues? So maybe there's some places where mobile device usage is higher and people like to receive information that way and it's suggestible. There are places where people still very much value face-to-face interaction. And so understanding that is important. And one of the ways that you can do that is by leverage your, you know, oftentimes your neighbor, like the person that you're supporting in the business may have insights on this. The other nice thing when you're engaging your business to develop communication and policy and processes is that you have their buy-in just by osmosis, because it's very unlikely that somebody's going to hate a training video that they're actually in. So it's almost self-serving where you're engaging people to help you build something, but then you're also getting their buy-in by engaging them at the outset and by having them help you build it. So that's really important. And then I think the last key piece is looking at what works in your industry. So if you're in an industry where a lot of people don't have desktop computers because they're on the road, then you need to think through, is my training done via desktop the best way to reach my people? Or is it a magnet in lockers because they have lockers and you're in logistics? Or is it their ID badges because everybody's got a badge and can you use that real estate somehow? So again, the way you come up with these ideas is walking through the places where the people you work with inhabit and thinking through what's the real estate here? What are people looking at? You know, I'll give you a really quick example. I'm from Miami. And in a lot of offices and companies in Miami, there's a coffee station because we're huge, you know, cafecito drinkers. And I was like, what's the one area everybody goes to? It's the coffee station. So how can I use that coffee station? Can I print out, you know, can I have cups that have a message? Can I put it on right in front of the coffee machine that I know everybody stares at every day? But then is it also a clever message? Can I tie it back to coffee? You know, I mean, mm-hmm, it's, you know, mm-hmm, like, is it
creative?
Yeah. Is it a keep calm, call compliance type poster? That kind of stuff that's clever, that's funny, that's going to stand out. And you have to be a little fearless because it's a lot of times it's either cheesy or it's out of the box or it's unusual for a compliance poster to look that way. But that's going to be effective and that's going to resonate. And that's what matters. And you can't be afraid of failing, right? You can't be afraid of putting something out there that maybe it doesn't work. And then you just try again. So, because it's easy to be safe.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, as you look ahead, you've been in the industry for a minute and you've been able to see some of the trends around risk and new and emerging risks. And there's dozens of organizations I've worked with where a lot of the risks are starting to converge. So we're seeing privacy and data intelligence and artificial intelligence kind of crossing over traditional industry. What are some of the areas that you would kind of forecast compliance and ethics officers need to keep an eye on looking ahead?
I know everyone's talking about this, but data analytics is critical. And the important piece there is everyone talks about data analytics, but what not everybody talks about is, you know, quality data. So if you're not at a place in your program where you can do all the fancy data analytics things, or you don't have a dedicated resource, or you just haven't gotten to that point, start to think about ways that you can drive the business or you yourself help clean up the data and put it in a format that is going to be digestible and in a way that you can process it and bring out valuable insight for your program. So that's one area. I think artificial intelligence is important too, and just generally this whole idea of automation is important. So what are the processes that you can automate, not necessarily so you can just like remove entire functions, but so that you can move to higher value activities. So are there programmatic kind of redundant, repetitive tasks that you can start to automate? And that's another one where working with your business that's already probably doing this on the business side can be insightful for you as a compliance person, leveraging that same exact technology and insight for your purposes. I think corporate social responsibility or ESG, there's different, obviously people are calling it different things, but that whole suite of being a company that's got a purpose beyond profit is huge right now, definitely resonates with a lot of people. And that's important, not just from a values perspective and culture perspective, but also as a recruiting tool. It's so, so important. and more people, especially as you look to the younger generations, but I think beyond that, they see that as an important thing. And so working with your recruiting teams to understand how you can move that forward and working with whatever team is involved in that corporate social responsibility area is so important so that there's a lot of synergies there for compliance people.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts and your experience, AP, and I look forward to connecting with you again on Principled.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.